This is Jaguars Reporters.
Jaguars Reporters Reporters.
Presented by Burger King. Join Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher and peer of the realm we call Game Day, Cole Pepper, as they break down the last Jaguars game and look ahead to the next time the Jaguars take the field.
Why would I listen to anybody else?
Jaguars Reporters is brought to you by Burger King, American Express, Baptist Health, Wells Fargo, Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars Reporters begins right now.
And we welcome you in, Jaguars Reporters, here on a Tuesday night. Cole Pepper, John Osher. First game in the books. Jaguars lose it in overtime. And now we look forward to the Houston Texans coming to town. And, boy, a lot to discuss this week here on this fine program. We'll get to the three burning questions here in just a moment. I want to remind you can join the conversation via the phone lines at 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. You can also join via Twitter. You can either tweet to myself, at Cole Pepper, or to John Osher, at John Osher.
I'm clever that way. So are you, by the way.
I think branding really our strength.
Sure.
And then you can also go on the Jaguars Facebook page, facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars. There are already a number of players who another folks who have asked questions on that.
And, Cole, I came up with that Twitter handle like that. I mean,
is that right?
It was not research. It was just
I went into committee.
Instinctive.
I actually had a committee and focus groups and sent out a number of questionnaires and surveys. Right. So, but it just, you know, different ways to skin a cat.
Gotcha.
That's all.
I think John needs a committee.
Maybe a committee of one?
Committee of one is just fine with me.
All right, let's get to it. Well, we'll start it off. Three burning questions. Let's get it rolling.
And now, three burning questions.
All right, question one, guys. What did Blaine Gabbert show you on Sunday?
Well, it showed me is the future. I mean, if you know, you can't assume that one game is a career turnaround, but I think he all of the major questions that everybody said, can he fix it? Can he fix it? Is he this? Is he that? I keep saying over and over again this week, if you didn't know that you were supposed to pick apart Blaine Gabbert and scrutinize his footwork and worry about where he was, watching that game, you would not have bothered to worry about the Jaguars quarterback. I mean, he stood in the pocket. He threw. He had guts. He talked to, you know, he talked to offensive linemen. He was composed under pressure late in the game. I don't think it's the best game he'll ever have, but
it's the best game he's had so far.
Yeah, but it's a clear step up, and it didn't. It was not a fluky statistical game. It was a solid game where, you know, frankly, he was under a lot of duress. Probably would tell you that he could have made some better plays, but it was a significant stride, and it shows you that he has a real chance to be real good.
You bring up, and you talked about this with a running game, but you bring up a great way that fans can kind of do a reality check on what they're seeing. And if you can take the emotion out of it and the preconceptions out of it and watch, particularly in an opening game, but really at any point, and say, all right, if I'd never seen this guy before, what would I think about him right now?
And, you know, on the blogs or the, you know, comment sphere, if you will, there were people saying, you know, he didn't do this, he didn't do that. Well, I'm not saying he played a perfect game.
No.
But if you were looking at this guy and thinking, can he be the guy?
More importantly, if you look at him and say, can you be a playoff team with a quarterback playing like that? You'd say, well, maybe things fall. You probably could be a playoff team.
And, you know, he made a play at the end of the game that was he put the ball where it had to be, the end of regulation. That, you know, especially if you consider it was his first game with this new staff, his first test with this new environment, you know, I was, if you're a Jaguars fan at that spot, you feel much better than you did in December.
Question two, did Maurice's holdout impact his play on Sunday?
I thought I did.
But that said, very impressive effort, better with him than without him, the whole ball of wax. But it would be naive to think that he was as good at, you know, whatever it is that makes him good with just 7 days in.
And I think there are a couple things that makes Maurice a good running back. One is he's durable.
Sure.
I mean, he can carry the ball. He carried the ball more times than I think the plan was, certainly because of the injury to Rashad, and he didn't appear to wear down at all at any point in the game. The other thing is he is so good once he gets past that first level of making the cut to the right place.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do that all the time the other day. Ran into Meester a couple of times on plays. Is that lack of familiarity with the offense? I don't think so. Once you get past the first level, it's more instinctual.
Right.
But I think it's the fact that he just hasn't been running the football in traffic very much. I think that impacted.
It was what you came to expect from him last year, which I wrote continually last year. It was as gutty and as professional a performance last year as I've ever seen, because he got everything out of what he could from last year. And that's really his calling card. He gets everything out of the situation. And on that level, I thought he did again the other day. It was a tough spot. It would have been easy to sort of come out of the game at certain points, but he played through it. He helped them, and you know, he was a reason. Got several first downs. He was a reason that the game was as close as it was.
Final question, boys: was Sunday's game a bit of retribution day for Gene Smith?
I think it was in a way, because he took so much heat last year on not just Blaine Gabbert. And remember, when Blaine Gabbert was drafted, he was drafted to sit. He was drafted with the intention that he was going to be the backup and David Garrard would be the starter. Then late in the year, if the Jaguars were in it, that Garrard would still be in there. If they weren't, then Gabbert might get some playing time at that point, but he'd have plenty of time to learn and acclimate to the National Football League game. If yesterday, I'll play another what-if for you. If yesterday was Blaine Gabbert's first game action in the NFL,
he'd be ecstatic.
You would be over the moon that, hey, right, we got this young quarterback. He's just 22. Look at this thing. I mean, he just,
right.
So that's another way to kind of put that in perspective. It's not just about Gabbert.
Right.
Cecil Shorts, Eugene Monroe just stymied Jared Allen, another draft pick.
And I think the last one's the biggest one is, you know, now if you look at it, I don't think Justin Blackmon played that well on Sunday. First game as a rookie. I think that happens as a wide receiver. That doesn't concern you that much. He didn't play poorly,
they
but he
gave
didn't.
Him a lot of attention, by the way, that Minnesota defense.
But there were still some plays he could have made, but that's rookie wide receiver, and that's okay, because if he drew attention from, you know, from other people, then that's great. But if you assume Blackman's going to be good, which right now I do, you saw steps from Gabbert, and you saw Monroe very possibly turning into the player that he's going to become. That's three really solid guys with top 10 picks. And, you know, Tyson Alualu, I think, is still coming back from his knee. I think the future is still ahead of him. But certainly three guys who you can lay your hat on and say, boy, these guys look like they could be cornerstone guys.
All right, those are three burning questions today, and we'll get into some of those topics a little bit more as we continue on the program here. You can join the conversation, 355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. You can go to facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars or tweet to Cole Pepper or John Osher. Join Jeff Loggeman right after this program. Jaguars All Access on CBS 47 starting at 7 o'clock. Tonight's special guest will be the aforementioned Eugene Monroe. When we come back, we'll hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, what you may not know about that game. Or you might have figured it out after our first segment. That's coming up right here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Cole Pepper, John Osher here at Jaguars Central. Fans, nobody helps you get ready for game day better than Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today. Tomorrow, by the way, on location with Jaguars this week, Joe Fortunato, can it be? At Latitude 30.
It'd be.
By the way, I'm told there's been some sampling of some of the Latitude 30 food in advance of this, just to make sure everything was on the up and up. And rave reviews.
Solid.
For the menu.
Really solid.
So
better than solid. Very good.
Stop on by, see John and Brian and Jeff. Tony going to be there too? We got loaded, full house.
You already mentioned that there was going to be food.
Good point.
All right.
Why am I not going to be there? What's going on? We may need to make a change. All right, that's coming up tomorrow, 6 o'clock until 8, right here on Jaguars Radio. All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Before we get to some calls, let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith, about what you may not know about Sunday's game.
Really how well Eugene Monroe played in his matchup. You're talking about the guy coming out of the 2011 season with the most sacks in the league, 22, and 34 and a half quarterback hits. He did not record a stat on the day.
How about that? No, actually, that's not true. He did record one stat, which was an encroachment foul. That was
yeah,
the only
and
thing
a really
and a kind of
and sort of a bush league move.
A little bit, although I would say there was no whistle in his defense in terms of the actually hitting the quarterback. But it kind of reminded maybe John,
he
you
knew
remember
what
this.
He was doing.
Remember, when Patrick Ewing was playing college basketball.
Yeah.
And he would, you know, against the championship against Villanova, I think he blocked the first three shots just to show he was there, even though he got goaltending called on him every time.
Yeah, that was actually against North Carolina, North Carolina won,
yeah.
Incidentally.
Right. So just one of those things kind of reminded me of, by the way, Villanova won too.
Yes, they did.
Just one of those things where, you know, you make that play early trying to make a statement.
Right. And, again, as we talked about in the opening segment, credit to Blaine. I mean, that was a hard hit. It was a jolting hit. And he stood in against a lot of heat and a lot of hits on Sunday, and I know it'll take time nationally for that perception to go away, but if anybody watches that film and thinks he's scared of pressure, they're seeing the wrong thing.
All right, so let's get some calls in here, John. What do you say?
Sure, why not?
All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Scott in Mandarin, who will lead us off here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Scott, how you doing?
Hey, guys, doing well, sir. Thanks for taking the call.
Good.
Well, real quick question on just get your opinion. Did the after we scored that last touchdown and got the lead, did the kickoff from Scobie, you think, have anything to do with the fact that he didn't boom that into the end zone and he kind of gave them a chance to run it back out to the 30?
Scott, what is this show called? Jaguars Reporters. And as such, I did some reporting, and I hope this will shed some light on things. It was not, as I was fuming after the game about, called a squib kick or a power squib. Scobie was trying to kick it through the end zone, and he just didn't hit it good.
Missed it. Yeah, it was a miss hit, and it was a mistake. It doesn't mean Josh is not an asset to the team, but it was a miss hit.
I'd rather be a miss hit than a bad strategy because
sure.
The bad strategy, we've seen enough of that, I think.
And from what Malarkey said on Monday, it was the fact that it went straight to the returner, and if it had bounced and kind of, you know, caromed all over the place, then the
still might have been good.
Then the coverage has a chance to get there. It was the fact that it went right to the returner and he got it out to the 31. That's what hurt on that play. And it's too bad. It's one of those things that the little things make the difference in the final, you know, minute of a game.
All right, Scott, appreciate the call. 800-355-NFL1. Let's get a call in. We go social, and we'll get a call in here from Facebook, Joe.
Yeah, by the way, Cole and John, all of our tweets and Facebook questions are provided from our friends at CopyFax. And, of course, this one's been all over the place, but I guess we'll credit it here. Simple question. With less than 20 seconds on the clock, why couldn't our top 10 ranked defense from last year stop the Vikings so we could win the game?
The one play that really drives you crazy out of that was the pass to Aroma Shadu,
mm-hmm.
Which is a great name to say, by the way. That was the biggest – that was the one play. You know, if you go back and look at it, it's one of those plays where – the Jaguars had guys all around him,
mm-hmm.
but they're kind of in a prevent, and yet prevent's supposed to prevent long plays, and it still wound up getting the play in there. Credit the Vikings for making it, but
yeah
that's the one that you want to have back.
Well, if you're concerned about the defense, though, I'm concerned less about that final drive as you would be about the Vikings being able to run pretty consistently at times in the second half, control things. Drives like what happened in the last 20 seconds shouldn't happen, but Rasheen Mathis made a good point this week when he said, you know, that was really a one-play drive, and yes, they wanted to stop it, but I don't know that pass was indicative of the entire game. Mm-hmm. What they're more concerned about as an overall thing going forward is tackling better, not letting a guy like Percy Harvin get outside, that's more of an issue long term than I think the last play or the play that led to the tying field goal.
Yeah, and that's, again, on this show, you know, we do the post game show after the game. Monday night, you got Mike Mularkey to talk about kind of as the post game show. We're kind of bridging the gap between the last game and the next game, but also kind of we'll look at some bigger picture things, direction, strategic, that sort of thing. And I think that the issue of the lack of getting a big, you know, of stop making a play there, all right, that's one.
Sure.
One doesn't mean it's a trend or
right.
Or an issue. We'll see if it is. Tackling has been an issue, though, in
sure.
the preseason, something that Mike Mularkey talked about. And I realize that Harvin's one of the tougher guys to tackle in the NFL, despite the fact he's not, you know, he's not exactly a bruiser, but he's fast and he's
yeah.
got that quick acceleration and he's tough to bring down.
And he had six receptions for 84 yards, and I don't want to say all 84 were after the catch, but it seemed like it.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, sometimes when you talk to players, they can point some things out that are very true. When I talked to Rasheen yesterday, that's what he said. He goes, you know, that they really gave up two long passes, the pass to the tight end and the pass in the final 20 seconds. That's not what you want. But, again, more concerning, you're going to give up a long pass or two during a game. It just happens. More concerning is when you've got a chance to stop a play for 3 yards and you let it turn into 9 or 10 and it's been happening, that's what needs to get fixed, because that's what's going to hurt you long haul more than giving up a pass where the other team just executes. In the NFL, a team is going to execute passes once in a while.
Especially considering that Harvin was the one guy on the outside you had to worry about. I mean, that's the thing that's going to get under, that's going to bother fans.
Yeah, I'm sure they mentioned Harvin in the meetings last week.
Do you know that for a fact, Chuck? Can you go behind the scenes
yeah.
and give us that? 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Let's go to Mike calling from a truck. Mike, you're up here on Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm out here driving around listening to you guys. Hey, I just got a few comments. One, I think Blaine Gabbert's a stud. I really think he's going to be the developmental quarterback we're looking for. He's got the keys. He's got the talent. He's shown so much improvement. I guess the question I'm looking at really is, how long do you think it'll be before Blaine Gabbert becomes the face of the Jaguars?
Well, and I think, you know, if it continues the way it's gone so far this offseason, preseason, and, you know, bear in mind, there's going to be steps back this year because he's still a young guy. I think you're going to see it happening this year. I mean, Maurice Jones-Drew is still the face. He's still the guy who made 3 Pro Bowls. It's okay to have 2 faces. But I think by the end of this season, Gabbert is going to be pushing that, you know, pushing toward that.
John, I think I've had this conversation with you before off air. I think there are 3 ways that fans connect with players. If you talk about a guy being the face of the franchise, it's about connecting with that guy. Not just, you know, number one is if you have a chance to actually meet the guy in person,
sure.
right, and you have that kind of connection. Number two is if you find out that there's something that you care about that he cares about too. You share a common support of a charity, or both like the same kind of cars, or what, I don't know, whatever it might be. You have something in common that you connect with them. But third, this is how most fans connect with most players. When a player does something good on the field in a game that the fan finds important. Now, whether that's opening day or whether it's a Monday night game or a playoff game or a game against a rival, when that happens, that's when you start to build that. That's why that team from 96 and those players
sure.
who played 96, 97, 98, 99, why they're the most beloved Jaguars largely is because they were playing in games when things mattered. Right?
Well, they won.
And
that's the biggest thing, obviously. Blaine's got to win.
Yeah, exactly.
The team's got to win. People get really tired of hearing this, and I get emails in the Ozone all the time saying, oh, you're talking about rebuilding again. But there is a process with a young quarterback that you have to go through to get there. And I think we saw the first part of it the other day. We're not going to laud him too much because they didn't win the game. But certainly Blaine made the play at the end of the game. That was the first time he had made a play like that. To have that happen in a same game where he looked really, really good, those are some pieces that make you think this could be the beginning of something good. It's still got to happen in front of us, though.
800-355. Thank you for the call, Mike. Drive safely out there. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. And coming up here on Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King, Mike Mularkey said it. We'll hear from the head coach. Also, we fill a hole in the ozone, one of the questions that slipped through the cracks in the ozone, and we'll answer that one. Plus, an injury update coming for you as well, and we'll look ahead to the Jaguars-Texans game, the home opener coming up on Sunday. Visit Sonny's today and try the new barbecue baskets, the slow-smoked pulled and sliced meats basket for $7.99, or for just a little more, choose between two other mouth-watering baskets. Sonny's, the first name in barbecue. Back with more Jaguars reporters right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back. Jaguars Reporters presented by Burger King on this September 11th, 2012, 11 years after the 9/11 attacks. Hope you're taking time to salute those who, we've got our American flag right up here in the studio. See how patriotic
we
are, John?
Yes, we did.
Won't spend the time. We do actually have two flags up, that's true. Won't take too much time on that reflection. I know everybody else has been doing that the most of the day, so hope you had a chance to properly note the day as we continue on here, getting ready for the Jaguars and Texans on Sunday. 1 o'clock kickoff. We'll have coverage beginning at 10 a.m. with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. Time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health. Depend on us for life. And this is going to be a little bit of a busy injury update, Johnny.
Yeah, how much time you got?
Yes, get comfortable. Uche Nwaneri, ankle and a knee, but he came back in the game and toughed it out, so kudos there. Cam Bradfield has an ankle, an MRI. Have you heard an update on the MRI? I expect we probably hear that tomorrow from Mike Malarkey.
I will usually get that on Wednesdays.
Rashad Jennings, a knee.
Mm-hmm.
Could be a couple of weeks.
As could Bradfield.
Same with Bradfield. Evan Britton, not a serious or long-term situation with his lower leg injury, but probably going to be questionable for this week's game. DeAnthony Smith, not as serious.
Right.
Another foot injury there. And Derek Cox with the hamstring. We wait to see if he can come back this week. Daryl Smith has the groin. Probably
doesn't
not going
like
to be back this
go.
Week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, boy, a lot of injuries from the shin down on this team.
Yeah, and you know, Mike talked about it yesterday. He's never seen anything like it, and it's sometimes you get runs, and it happens. And I get questions all the time: why, what happens? And you know, it's football. People get hurt.
There could be something to it, or it might just be complete coincidence.
But you know, you watch the Steelers the other night; they've got injuries all along the offensive line. You know, we see it here because we're here.
Yeah, it's not the number of injuries that got my attention, although it did in part. It was that they all seem to be, you know, the same kind of injury. A lot of ankles, a lot of foots.
Yeah. I you know,
explain it to me right now, John.
Yeah, and that's what people want, because it's frustrating, it's angering, but with injuries, there's not always an explanation.
And the Jaguars offensive line in particular has been hit hard.
Yeah.
Spits. With the injury, of course, that was a lower leg injury. You've got
now a lot of times injuries do happen in waves at single positions, and I've always thought a lot of times that's because when you have guys hurt, you have more guys at those positions taking more reps, and it puts more strain on the body. Yep. And teams I've been around have gone through that sort of a thing, but I don't know that that's something that's necessarily preventable.
All right, John Estes would be the other one, another leg injury as far as offensive line. All right, 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. Last night on the Mike Malarkey Show, the head coach talked about the upcoming game against the Texans.
They got a really physical offensive line. They like to run the football. They like to establish the run and really use the clock like we do. And then they have a very, very extensive play-action game off of the run game. And everything looks alike, so you really got to be on your toes and have your keys. And there will be keys to know the difference. And then, obviously, the weapons that they have to go with everything that they have offensively. They're a difficult offense to defend.
Might be the best quarterback, running back, wide receiver trio in the National Football League. You can Atlanta and Philly probably in that conversation as well. But Matt Schaub is very good. Arian Foster might be the best running back in the league. And Andre Johnson is probably the best wide receiver not named Megatron in the league.
Yeah, I mean, when Andre's healthy, which has happened a little less the last couple of years than they would like, he's as good as anybody, including Megatron or whoever. His numbers over time, I certainly bear that out. One thing about the Texans that's interesting is, first of all, if if you're looking for an example of why you don't move quickly to change things necessarily when you're not having the success on the in terms of wins and losses, they are a perfect example. That was a franchise where the fans wanted Gary Kubiak fired 2 years ago.
Oh yeah,
and they had the patience to stick with it. They knew internally they were close, and it's borne that out. A lot of times, patience it takes longer than fans want to take. The other thing about the Texans that's interesting is they are a team right now, because Kubiak's been there for so long and because they have offensive players that have been there a while, they really know what they are as a team, especially on offense.
Yep.
They are a downhill running team. They're going to cut back, and they're going to run play action off of that. And they know how to get into situations to succeed. And that helps in this league. When everybody on the offense knows what they're about, that's the kind of team they are right now.
For years, there have been a couple of teams in the AFC who have been about one thing in one thing offensively. The Steelers have always been about one thing, you know, their style of play, their physical style of play. The other one, you might not think about right off the bat, but for years, the Broncos ran the same with all those different running backs. It was constantly the same result, even with different guys back there.
Well, they ran Kubiak, this offense.
And I was going to say, it's exactly this with Kubiak and that heritage there. So now you've got to get – you don't have John Elway at quarterback, but he's pretty good.
Right.
But you've got a better receiver, and you've got, I think, a better running back than any of those guys, with the possible exception of Terrell Davis.
Yeah, Terrell's pretty good.
But in terms of sustaining it,
it's a scheme that you don't have to have a great running back to be successful, but they've got a great running back, and it makes it even better because they're one of the few teams in the league that they can be explosive without hitting big passes. They can be explosive in the running game and get it going and start reeling off 10, 12-yard runs, and all of a sudden you feel like you're playing uphill against them.
All right, let's get some more calls in here. 800-355-NFL1, 355-6351. John and Keystone is up next here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. John, how you doing?
All right, how you going, guys?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, bringing up what you said, and I'm getting an echo. I don't know, so I hope I'm not sounding that way on the other line.
No, you're good for
us. Fine for us.
Okay. Roger Goodell, I'm starting to question him. The thing with Jared Allen and the where he ran offside and didn't get a penalty for that. And the other thing is where this is really irritating because it's backing up on me. But anyhow, the rants and raves in the Times Union and also on the other radio station blaming Scobie for the missed kick, like that made a difference in the game, which
the missed extra point
just kicked the game instead of going for 2 points.
No, you're right, and that was something we talked about on post game. You know, Marco and I had that extra point not been blocked, by the way, by Khalil, who had a ton of those blocks in college. He's gotten a knack for it, and he's 6'7", has long arms. Anyhow, if that had not been blocked and they'd made the extra point, they would not have gone for two later in the ball game. Just plain and simple. So there are enough things you can pick out to say, John, hey, they missed the opportunity there. They wouldn't have gone to overtime if that had happened.
Right. But
that's not one of them.
And I don't necessarily think the kicking game cost them the game, but there have been some errors in that area that clearly have to get fixed. The extra point block did not cost them that game, and I had overlooked that in something I wrote earlier, and thankfully a lot of fans called me on that. Thank you, fans. But
dang, I missed my chance to call them out on
it. It's not something that you want to have be a trend, obviously, blocked extra points. It didn't hurt them then, but that will hurt you.
Yeah, and you know, as far as the kicking game, the things that really the part of the kicking game that was the most troubling was the miss hit on the kickoff by Scobie, and that was the thing that hurt him the most because it gave him out to the 31-yard line, and then had one big play to.
And you could still make the argument that had they not gotten that, who's to say they wouldn't have used the 11 seconds or the 6 seconds?
Sure.
I'm sorry, to complete a 11-yard pass. But, and, you know, I don't necessarily think Josh, I mean, he's to blame because he mishit the ball, but most of the time he hits that. Guys make mistakes, you miss kicks.
Yeah.
And there were clearly many, many opportunities to win that game that Josh Scobie's mishit was not the disaster play of the game.
No, clearly not. All right, 800-355-NFL1 if you want to join the conversation. You need a truck that works for you even when you're not working. The 2012 Silverado, the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup truck that fits your lifestyle. See your Southern Chevy dealer today, proud sponsors of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We're back with more Jaguars reporters presented by Burger King. A little closer look at the opponent. Coming up, the Houston Texans, as well as most surprising or notable thing that happened in the first week of the season. We'll talk about that. And Gene Smith names his Scouts Eye unsung player. That's right around the corner after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. Welcome back, Jaguars reporters, presented by Burger King. Cole Pfeffer, John Osher here at Jaguar Central. Joe Fortunato with the controls. Phone boy, KU Kyle, answering the call. Somebody has to. That's why Joe doesn't have to.
All right, Kyle.
Joe's least favorite things on the planet. Picking up the check and answering the phone. Doesn't have to be either one of them tonight. Can I give you, speaking of reporting, can I give you a little insight, little snippet of information?
Why start now?
I thought I'd take a run at it. Herb Taylor, who the Jaguars signed as an offensive lineman, somebody they need to with the injuries. He's a tackle, can play both tackle spots. He may have become my favorite Jaguar on this team.
Right.
He owns his own barbecue restaurant in Houston.
All right, I
love a guy who's going to put it on the line like that. So I got to meet Herb Taylor. That's going to be the guy I'll be seeking out tomorrow in the locker room. All right, Scouts Eye unsung player. Let's hear from the general manager, Gene Smith.
Montel Owens. He was outstanding on special teams. And if we get more guys playing like him, we'll be a lot better in that phase.
He was pretty good. And he wouldn't have played as much special teams had Maurice not shown up
right
this past week. So
another guy who played well, I was talking with Jeff Loggeman earlier, I believe for his Film Room Friday segment on Jaguars.com, he's going to break down Greg Jones. Mm-hmm. And he showed me a couple of clips of Greg the other day. Pretty impressive stuff, and it makes you again remember why this guy is one of the best fullbacks in the league.
355-NFL1, 1-800-355-6351. Time now to fill a hole in the ozone. Joe from Tallahassee writes in to the ozone on Jaguars.com. Thank you. On a 1 to 10 scale, how concerned are you with our depleted O-line? Please give some insight into your level of concern as well.
Yeah, I would be really, really concerned if, say, Britton or Bradfield, if they were saying they were out for the season.
Yeah.
And short term, you got to be concerned because if they have a couple injuries – then, yes, we're at crisis mode. But I think the guys who are in there now, Brewster did a good job the other day. Guy Wimper certainly could have played better, and with a week to prepare, you would hope he would. You should be able to get by a week or two until these guys get back without it being disaster. So I would say it's the concern's high.
Give me a number then, 1 to 10.
If 10's the highest, six.
Yep.
But we're not at DEFCON 10 or whatever the DEFCON ratio is. DEFCON, we're not off the charts.
Whatever. DEFCON whatever.
We're DEFCON not something. That's the new phrase.
Welcome to DEFCON something.
Whatever DEFCON is.
All right. That is a hole in the ozone. We have now filled it properly.
There were some holes in that ozone.
There were some holes in the answers, too. My answer on that, my concern is a 6.5. However, if any of those guys get back, Bradfield or Britton in particular, if they get back in the next 2 weeks, that's going to drop to a 3.7.
Right. You're at the teetering point, though. I mean, clearly you cannot – they've got a lot of guys already on IR. You're at the edge. You hope you can stay healthy for a couple of weeks and get some of these guys back.
All right, let's get a couple more calls in here before we are shuffled off, and we'll start watching Jaguars All Access tonight. 800-355-NFL1, a special Tuesday night edition of that show, by the way, after the dual Monday night games last night. Steven in Jacksonville is up next here on Jaguars Reporters. How you doing, Steven?
Hey, I am dandy. How about yourself?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. Hey, in my opinion, the coaching staff either gave away or stole that game from the Jaguar players and the fans. Players played great for the most part, did what they were required and asked to do, and then the coaches gave it away with that prevent defense from the 31 and just allowed him to drive down and have a chance for a field goal.
Let me disagree with you on that point from this standpoint. If you didn't like that they were running the prevent defense, then it was a 31-yard play. The prevent defense is designed to not give up the 31-yard play, right? I mean, that's what you want to avoid out of that. There are plenty of reasons why the Jaguars lost, and if you want to sit there and do some finger-pointing in Week 1, by all means, knock yourself out. There were things that players did. There were some coaching. It always happens that way. There wasn't one thing that stands out that is the one and only reason the Jaguars lost this game. But there were a number of things that, hey, if Gabbert completes that pass to Blackman on the first drive, if Scobie kicks it through the end zone, here's one that nobody's going to talk about. On the touchdown from Gabbert to Cecil Shorts, Shorts' knee actually hit down, and the ball was at about the 1/2-yard line. If the Vikings player gets a hand on him at that point, and he's down, ruled down there, the Jaguars have to run at least another play or two. Maybe they don't. The time is not there at the end of the ball game for the Vikings to get it in overtime. So,
and I would actually argue, you know, something that got lost because it didn't happen in the last 2 minutes. When Mularkey decided to punt with and a gamble, the defense would get the ball back. I was on the live blog. There were a lot of comments. What's he doing? What's he doing? What's he doing? Well, that coaching move turned out to work and got you back in the game.
Yeah.
So there's a million different things. I get that fans hate the prevent defense, but it is still in that position. You want to keep the play in front of you. You don't want to give up the long touchdown. So I just don't think that one play can be completely blamed on the prevent defense. They found a hole in the zone.
All right, let's get one more call in here before we call tonight. Let's go to John in Fernandina, who's up next here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. John, how you doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Good. I have a comment and a question. My comment is this. I don't have a problem. I mean, I don't like the way Scobie kicked the ball, and maybe he did mess up at the end.
Yeah, I was saying neither does he, by the way.
Right. He, with all the things that he's done good, you know, not only kicking the ball well and kicking that long one to beat the Colts, but how many times has he kicked it 10 yards and fell on it for us? There's a lot that he does, so I don't have a big problem with him hitting it. Of course, I wanted him to hit it good, but I'm going to kind of let him go on this one. And my question is about John Chick, the status, best-case scenario, worst-case scenario of him getting back on the field. And I'll take my answer off the answer. Thank you.
Remains on the physically unable to perform list. He can't come off of that until mid-October. And really, it's going to be a situation where in mid-October we find out in a couple weeks leading up to that. He's still working on the side. He had a very serious knee injury, patella tendon, I believe, last year. It takes a while to come back from. Clearly, they believe he might still help, which is why he's on the PUP list.
Which means the earliest he can come back would be after week six.
October 15th in that area, week six. So it's probably going to be realistically 2 or 3 weeks before you start hearing a lot of hard news, whether or not they'll be able to bring him off that list or not.
The Jaguars would like to get better pass rush out of their front four, especially. Part of what would happen against the Vikings did a lot of short passing game. Mm-hmm. Like, as you mentioned, those passes to Harvin, you know, may have traveled 4 or 5 yards, you know, combined downfield.
When that game first ended, I thought the pass rush needed work. They got more pressure than you thought when Ponder took time to drop.
All right, that'll do it for us here on Jaguars Reporters, presented by Burger King. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock at Latitude 30. Jaguars this week, the first show at Latitude 30. John will be there because there's food. And then, of course, on Sunday we'll have the Jaguars and the Texans, 1 o'clock kickoff, 10 o'clock. Right here at Everbank Field, we will have the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show. For producer Joe Fortunato, for John Osher, for KU Kyle, answering the phones, Cole Pepper saying thanks for listening and good night from Jaguar Central.